Welcome to the Weed Out, where we weed out the bullshit and talk about the nonsense happening in our backyard. I'm Spencer Fox Peterson, along with my co-host as always.
Hi everyone, I'm Joanna May Booty.
And this week we are recording. It is middle of December, December 19th. The genocide in Gaza is still happening. It's still on our mind. We are going to bring it up on every platform. It's not just in Gaza. It's also the global south in general, Congo, Sudan. The list is long. We are anti-imperialists. We are anti-capitalists here at the Weed Out. And we want to remind people that regardless of any factor, anti-imperialism and anti-capitalism come first. That's our values. So, you know, we do not stand for this genocide. We do not stand for this imperialism. And, you know, it's supposed to be a wonderful time of year where families get together, but families are being destroyed by our tax dollars, by our bombs. And solidarity and shout out to all the people doing direct action, whether it's protesting, blocking highways, blocking shipments of arms, resisting in any way they can. Shout out to all you. You're seen. We love you. And, you know, every moment is a chance to resist. And I know the white neoliberals during the Trump years kind of broke that word resist, but the resistance must go on and it must be a lifestyle choice. So here at the Weed Out, just to be clear, anybody listening, we are not Zionists. We are not imperialists. We're here for people. We care about people. That's why we talk what's going on in backyard, because we can't necessarily stop the bombs happening in Gaza at this moment. God, I wish I could flip a switch and change it all, but I can't. But what I can do is bring light to things that are happening in our backyard. And it's all parallel. All the imperialism is the same down to the local level, to the geopolitical level. So the existence of policing is a way to colonize and occupy workers to keep us in line. So we keep going and fund them and fuel the machine and be good little workers. They don't want thinkers. You know, Rockefeller famously said, I want a nation of workers, not a nation of thinkers. And you should be pissed when you read that quote, because he thinks of us nothing less than a bunch of ants. And, you know, here at the Weed Out, we, just because they're dead doesn't mean we don't talk shit about them. So fuck Rockefeller. I said Rockefeller earlier, right?
Yeah, you did.
Fuck all these people and, you know, these imperialist scum. There's no other name for it. And they need to be told, reminded that. So that's what this first 2 minutes was about. Even though we're not going to talk about Palestine and Gaza, fuck the imperialists. That's all I got. Joanna, how are you?
I'm doing well. In full agreement. It's really sad that our government isn't listening to what the majority of the people are now saying. So I think the atrocities of what is happening in Gaza are very heavy, but I think it is wonderful to see that the majority of Americans do want a ceasefire. They do not want this kind of bloodshed to be occurring. And war crimes are being committed. And I was someone with a focus in ethics. I don't know what this will mean for the future historians to look back on, because war crimes are committed all of the time, but this is so blatant and the information is different than it's been potentially in the past when we get information about wars. So I hope everyone is taking care and doing what they can to support themselves and their community. Like Spencer said, thank you to everyone who we see out there doing direct action, be it through covering stories and writing about it, to walking 25 miles to show how fervently against the genocide in Palestine that you are. So thank you to our listeners and to the community at large that understands the connection between something, like you said, Spencer, so far away, something that could seem so removed from us. But that's why we do focus on local politics here and local issues here, because we do have a police presence here in Western Massachusetts and throughout the entire United States. And as abolitionists, in addition to all of the things you've discussed and mentioned, abolishing these systems so that there can eventually be care and help and community that doesn't involve state-sanctioned violence and murder, would be the ideal world that I imagine. So as we finish off a year, I just want everyone to know that my focus will remain the same in the new year. And I hope yours will too.
And to share my New Year's resolution, that I've been keeping up on, it's not even the new year yet, but picking a fight with a white man in proximity or in power. So there's a few on my list. And you know what? The best part is when they acknowledge that I'm there bothering them. So that is
really good. I'm not going to lie.
We're
on
not
going to
focus
that
too much attention.
Really good.
This isn't about
it's
bullying
not.
Per se.
Not,
and
not.
These people should be bullied, but I'm not going to lead the bullying. I will just do my part. I love when they respond and let us know that they see us, because it's like, great, you just legitimized me. Thank you.
It's a called engagement, everyone.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Good. And, you know, they all say, any attention is good intention, right? So when it comes to this, getting the word abolition on their eyeballs, getting them shaking in their boots, whether they know they're shaking or not, they are, you know, a couple of the people we interact with on a regular. And these aren't the people I'm talking about are not random.
They're not abolitionists
or
random
they're also
people.
Like, you know, they're campaign managers. They're
yes, we're not people up picking on people randomly.
We're picking
That's
on people
true.
That haven't.
They're people in power.
Signed up for public scrutiny. That's
no, sure, sure. And I think
we punch up here. And if you decided to be a public figure, whether it's through media or politic or public service, well, fair game.
Joke's on you.
Fair game.
You
and
also
have more power
I,
than me, you know. So
well, that's true.
Even the director of the water department in Holyoke has more power than me. He just does. He directly affects he or they, she, he, they, whatever. They have so much more power, and we don't think about stuff like that. But these people are in positions of power, so they're open to scrutiny. So anytime I try to focus on white men, because as a white man, I feel like it's my duty to get my people. I don't go out of my way to find white men. They just are everywhere.
They're everywhere. You guys are all over the place, all
Democrat,
up in everything.
Republican, independent, communist. There's white men everywhere fucking shit up. And
you guys don't really quiet down. You know?
And they don't know how to deal with when another white man punches them back. They don't understand. They don't know what to do. They get flabbergasted. And you goat them into doing stupid shit, saying stupid shit. Because they're not used to being pushed back on. So that's my New Year's resolution. And I'm proud to say I'm already doing it. And it's working for me. And it's
I'm happy for you. Congratulations.
Great outlet.
That's great. I'm so glad. I don't have resolutions. So I want everyone to know mine is just, I don't have a resolution, but I was just saying I'll stay on the course, per usual. But if people do resolutions, have at it. I know this time of year is difficult for people. So if that's something that is something you do, that's fantastic. If that stresses you out, we don't care. Like, we want you to just get through to the new year. And I just want everyone to know we'll be here doing the same, not the same, but we'll have the same focus and we'll be doing similar work in the next year, because I think there are so many things that, even though we have, or now we're at, are we at 55 up? Is this 56 episodes?
56.
Yeah, so this is our 56th episode, and I just think it's very apparent to me, and I think our audience would agree, that there are stories every day that we could cover. There are people out there. There are journalists doing, there are investigative journalists doing work. There are our neighbors and community members doing great things. So we have some really good content planned for the new year. And that's exciting for me.
Yeah, and speaking of other abolitionists or just good community building content, podcasts and otherwise, Shout out to our friends at Mass Transparency, Jeff Raymond and Andrew Quimier. Shout out to the Shoestring people. They've actually done two police accountability kind of episodes. The second one got dropped today, where Shelby and Dusty of the Shoestring spoke to Will of also who's written for the Shoestring over the years about his history with Chief Jody Casper. You've heard me rant about the Northampton police chief. If you want to hear a different take, but still very critical and very well resourced, their episode on Chief Jody Casper is definitely something to check out. I recommend both those podcasts. And there's other journalists and other activists that we love. We don't have enough time to shout them out today, but those two are the ones that are pushing police reform and police accountability and transparency. Like Shelby has been diligently trying to get weapons inventory from various police departments in the Pioneer or the Connecticut River Valley, formerly the Pioneer River Valley. Joanne and I have tried getting weapons records, but you know, truthfully, we gave up because it's frustrating. They basically accuse the person asking of like, oh, you might be getting this information for possible terrorism. It's like, what the fuck are we talking about here? You know? So shout out to Shelby for staying on that and highlighting.
Yes. Shelby's my fam. So shout out to my fam. They did give us some, like, Shelby definitely gave you and I some like background information on how to request.
Oh, absolutely.
Records. And Andrew did as well. So Shelby and I go way back. Shelby is my partner, Caleb's cousin. And even if they weren't, I would still say the Shoestring overall as a collective does great work. And like Jeff and Andrew do fantastic work too. It's usually from out east, but they're always just, both of them have great platforms. And together with Mass Transparency, I think it's fantastic. Their podcast is great too.
And keep in mind, like, this is not paid plugs. We don't do anything. No. These are just people we really respect, and we think they're doing the quote unquote Lord's work, and
the Dark Lord's work.
Whatever, you know, like they're,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I just am really, you know, I'm in awe of the community, and not one person can do this, and without other people digging into the research, I can't do my job, and I can only do so much. I guess we can only do so much. There's only so many hours in a day, and there's only so many days in the week. So, that said, like, that's the goal of the Weed Out. We want to grow. We want to help get. We want to build, because we're abolitionists. We understand you cannot reform this structure from the within, whether it's journalism, mainstream journalism, whether it's corporate media, whether it's corporations in general, policing, public sector side stuff. Like, you cannot reform. We have to make them obsolete, and so that people don't need them anymore. So that's kind of our
goal for them. And they're doing that on their own. That's why we're here to highlight, you know.
Right, exactly. And
sadly,
so the Weed Out is us putting our money where our mouth is. Us putting, you know, we criticize the media. We criticize the, you know, opinion makers, the journalists. We maybe beat the story to the ground longer than, you know, mainstream media does. You know, mainstream media will talk about like fictitious fucking fentanyl over and over again, ad nauseum, but they won't mention the actual like malfeasance of a cop over and over again. They say it once if they have to say it. You know, Derek Chauvin is an anomaly. Like, that kind of stuff doesn't stay in the zeitgeist very long with policing. So that's why the Weed Out exists. The fucking corporate media doesn't hold these powerful people to account, and we criticize them. So we may as well stand 10 toes down on it and do it ourselves. And that also means recognizing that we alone aren't going to fix it. So please support these other entities. We do this for now, Joanna and I are doing this as, you know, our post-work curriculars. Like, this isn't a vanity project. We don't have any money. We fucking workers, man. But we do have voices. We do have lots of thoughts. We have the ability to mass communicate. We know we've built social media platforms before for other people and for ourselves, you know, not to, you know, just to understand. So the listeners know where we're coming from. So this is the end of the year kind of wrap up in a way. So just kind of remind everybody where we're coming from, where we're going, and trying to break that whole mindset of like, are you making money? How are you paying the bills? Well, yeah, bills need to be paid. Websites need to be paid for. But we would love your money for that. But at the same time, we're going to keep doing this either way, no matter what. Like, this is our duty. Like, our duty is to build something different that makes the existing structure that's holding us down obsolete. So that's the goal. And that's the goal of these other organizations and groups writers and journalists and podcasters now. So shout out to Shelby for being a podcaster. Shout out to Dusty and Shelby. I think that this has been their inaugural couple podcasts. So hopefully they stick with it and they like it. If not, totally understandable. Writing is different than podcasting. And I definitely feel a lot more comfortable podcasting than I do writing. Just personally, Joanna's probably a mix of both. Everybody's different. Right?
I am a mix.
How do you
of
feel
both.
About what do you feel about podcasting versus writing?
I'm a mix of both, like you said. So as a person who's performed since I was 3 years old and like been in front of a microphone on a stage, I still have stage fright to this day if I teach. I think it's hard. It was that harder at first, and now it becomes more fluid because we're very consistent platform, and we have a conversationalist style between us and with our guests. So I think for me that works in terms of writing. As you know, I've been an adjunct faculty member for technical writing, so for dissertations, theses. So like journalistic endeavor, journalistic writing is actually a little harder for me. And I usually have to talk to you or my partner, Caleb, to help me with writing like that. But I still feel confident as a writer. So in the future, to all of our listeners who know us and love us, I do hope to do more investigative writing for the platform too. But like Spencer said, this is a side project beyond our full-time jobs and life. So we do what we can. And thank you so much for listening and supporting me, especially to my friends and loved ones and those I haven't met yet too. Hopefully we can even do a like get together sometime, but I love our core audience that we have at this point. And please, anyone, let us know if there's something we should cover coming out in the new year. Hit us up at theweedout@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you.
And if you feel more comfortable to hitting us up on social media, we check the DMs pretty regularly. So that's cool too.
Yeah, we do.
Email is preferred just for organizational purposes.
No, yeah, but whatever works. Whatever you never works, know who you'll get.
we follow through with what we say we're going to do, or we just say we can't. We're very honest people. So I feel like the proof's in the pudding on that. And just to kind of hone or make a finer point of what you were saying about writing. So like, I have a really hard time starting, whether it's writing a song, but I'm really good.
Started.
Yeah. So like,
yeah, that's hard.
Anybody at home, this is a reminder that you don't have to be good at every aspect, right? So singer, songwriter, you can write a great idea, but that doesn't necessarily mean you know how to play, execute it. You know, like you don't have to know how to play a saxophone. You can have the idea and teach somebody what you want, and then the expert can do it. So like, I'm better, I think, once somebody's written something and they have a shell of something, I'm really good at looking at it and reading it and offering critiques, because I can put myself in the position of the audience. And I'm definitely more of a from the producer side, personally. Like when I worked in music, I was way more comfortable on the other side of the glass at the you know, the control board and talking to the singer about like their performance, and not in the sense that I'm like a control freak. There's definitely like an element of control, knowing what you want, but it was more like, you have this thing that's raw and untethered, and you just need somebody to help you like stand outside yourself. I can do that. I can do that all day. But yeah, starting from scratch.
So I was the singer.
So working in group, like you gotta feel free to work in groups. Say you want to write, or you want to you know, you want to have a social media page that, even if it's something as small as something like a meme page, you know, team up with somebody.
Well, yeah, because I was just going to say, like, for me, because of my background in writing, like, the outline and the shell is kind of like where that's like where I shine. I can make you an outline anytime. Getting started is hard. So everybody, getting started is the hardest part. You just try to get started. But so like someone like Spencer and I, we work well together, similarly with my partner, Caleb. And I think I have always loved collaborating on projects and working with either my friends or my partners in life on different activities. And I know that doesn't always work out well for everyone. So it doesn't have to be your partner, but it can be friends. It can be people that you've just met, your neighbors in your community. There are so many good groups. There's A-Kine in East Hampton that you could reach out to. There's NAN, there's Demilitarized, there's Decarcerate, there's a couple of places up near. I'll share a bunch of resources if people are looking for community, because that is another thing as we wind the year down that I feel during this heavy period of grief that we all experience when we see things like this happening in the world, the genocide occurring all over the world, in Africa and in Gaza.
And here in America. The genocide of the Native Americans is ongoing. We're destroying our treaties. We never honor our treaties. That's an act of genocide. What we do to their water, how we trap them, how we cut them off, how we move them around. This government is genocidal here at home. It's not over. And what they did to Black people, I don't know if it qualifies as a genocide, but it's inhumane shit. What we're currently doing to Black men in this country, specifically with the prison industrial system. And that's why we're here at the Meetup. And I know not everybody's like going to want to dive into that content. So even if you listen just to be informed, or you just want to hear somebody else's, there's some other aspect in this world that you can participate in. It doesn't have to be police abolition or prison abolition. You know.
So yes, please. That was my point. Like, don't fall into despair.
Right.
Please fall into community.
Advocate for children to have resources.
And yes, anything that you, the elderly, right?
You don't even have to be like, I care
whatever you'd about like.
LGBTQ kids. You could just be like, all kids should have all the resources they need in their school. Period. End of story. And then that can be your argument. Well, if you're looking for money, the police department over there, it seems to be burning a lot of it, because that's really the reality. We give most of our money to militarized occupational forces, and that we say that word very purposely. So speaking of occupational forces, the meat of this episode is going to be about fascist rituals. All right. So if you're listening in Massachusetts in the last 2 weeks, you have to have heard about Waltham police officer Paul Tracy was on detail and hit by a driver, presumably fleeing another crime. So there's that fun element. But so an officer died simply on the side of the road, but also a service worker, a National Grid worker.
So had he pulled someone over, or he was like guarding?
He was like, he was doing the, you know,
like a traffic detail type thing.
Traffic cone situation. And
right.
So this person, I don't even care. Like, it's probably not great with this person why they were driving erratically. I think I read.
Yeah, something. I mean, for me, it's suspicious scares me just erratic. Because please, everyone drive normally.
All the information is coming from the police, by the way. So
right, of course. But they did kill a civilian. A civilian was killed too.
So this is my point with the occupation stuff. So a tragedy that happened. All the articles, if you were on Mass Live, WWLP or WCVB Boston or Boston Herald, Boston Globe, it was all about the officer. And then seventh paragraph in, it would say something about the National Grid worker, a Black man. Worker. I'm sorry. He's more valuable to the precious system. Because he's literally fixing the power grid, which nothing can happen without. The economy, the police are powerless without electricity. These fucking high school fucking failures can't do shit without their little toys, which are powered.
No, it's super sad too. Like, he's 36 years old. He's out there.
Me. You're more likely to die as a 36-year-old service worker driving a truck or working on the side of the road. You are far more likely. Cop is the 20th most dangerous profession per capita.
Yeah. So like this guy's job is definitely more like if he's working in National Grid, he was already in a more dangerous position.
And the reason we're bringing this up, it's also just disgusting propaganda, focusing on the police. Listen, this dude's got bennies. He's got life insurance. He's fine. Their union is strong. His family's going to be made whole. They may have to jump through some hoops. I'm not saying it's going to be easy for them, right?
Well, it's just the coverage, like how many stories are just focusing
but
on
the GoFundMe's that pop up.
Yes, and how they're trying
and
to
all this shit. And it's like, meanwhile, no mention of this worker who's probably making $70,000 a year as a highly trained guy that goes out in all weather to fix your power lines. More often, people like him die on the job than the cop. It just happens to be at the same time, and there's no focus on the worker. So right there, mass media, community, corporate media, no gives a fuck about us plebeians, us fucking peasants. None. Your seventh paragraph mention, right? And of course, when you go online, a lot of humans, individuals, bring this up. I'm not alone. Like, what the fuck? Why aren't they talking about the worker? And not even to say like the cop shouldn't be. I mean, I wouldn't mention it, but that's me. I understand he's a human being too, and he died needlessly. It didn't need to happen. You know, makes me wonder, why don't we invest more in public transportation? Why do we have all these pods? Like, I want to solve the problem at the issue. You know, taking away this incredible power that we give to almost every human adult in this country, regardless of ability, to drive a hunk of metal at anywhere from 25 to 150 miles per hour. It's super fucking stupid. It's a dumb system. And then you wonder why these tragedies happen. And they're totally fucking avoidable. But so this officer dies, whole hoopla. You couldn't drive down the pike still to this day. So I noticed the signs on Thursday on the Mass Pike. So I drive a lot for work. And today I was on the highway and the signs are still up, like remembering Officer Paul Tracy.
Did it say Sergeant? Is that because that's I saw?
No, that's a different list. Something else happened.
So who's that one? Because I was driving. Probably died of COVID.
I don't even know. Like half these dudes, like that's the thing. The cops use their COVID deaths.
Well, I know, but I thought the sergeant, the farewell sergeant one, was the one you were talking about.
So whenever some bootlicker mentions how many cops died last year, keep in mind heart attacks on the line of duty, COVID line of duty, that all counts towards.
Seriously.
Line of duty. So like their numbers are buffed. And they're still pitifully low compared to the civilians they kill extrajudicially without going to court. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the problem here. It's not that cops fear for their lives. It's an agent of the state acting as the state is killing people without due process. That's the cold, disgusting reality. And then vice versa, when a cop gets killed, either through accident or tragedy, like this side of the road shit, who wasn't preemptive, right? Or even preemptive murder, any of that, they'll throw the book at you so fucking hard because they care more about protecting the power of the state than they do the power of the people. Of course the institution's going to do that, right? Like, makes total sense. But the point I struggle with is why is you see the highway get shut down in LA last week for the ceasefire, the Jews, American Jews for ceasefire, whatever group that was. Like, the one group that should have a leg to stand on here. People are villainizing them. People are saying, you know, politicians saying like they should be, you know, this is terrorism, all this shit, right? Disgusting. Democrats too. It's not just Republican. And meanwhile, this guy dies, presumably collecting an OT check on the detail, which they have that market monopolied and regular workers can't get that. Then there's these fascist parades where all these cops clock in for overtime and they quote unquote, this is an actual headline, show massive sea of blue in his honor. Like, they're playing with us in our face. They're showing us the force they have. They can shut down a city. They can shut down ambulance lanes for a parade because of a tragedy. And the cynical thing is they don't give a fuck about Officer Tracy. Don't give a fuck about this man or his family. This is a grift. This is a show of force. This is akin to like Nazi jackboot parades. They get to show all their toys and all this shit. And like, if anybody fucks with us, we'll bring this down on you. Like, this is just bad luck. I know the person who drove is at fault, right? I know there's technically manslaughter or murder, right? I'm not saying there isn't somebody that is to blame, but this wasn't premeditated. And this is how they roll out on just bad luck.
Well, yes. So that's the thing.
Telling on themselves.
Yes. And I will say, not to say that, like, the media isn't covering only the police officer incredibly hard. You're not at all wrong. But if you do type in Waltham, Mass, the Herald, so like more local. Oh no, the Herald's covering him. Sorry. And NBC Boston, so it's like News Channel 10, I think, out there. Laura's worked with them. And WCBB has covered the worker. So Roderick Jackson is his name, and he went by Keto. And he had hundreds at his funeral mourning him. He was laid to rest in Cambridge. So this past Saturday. So just so people know. And his family does plan on suing, because I think in this case, like, if the charges aren't pressed, because he died in a motor vehicle accident, there's only so much that you can get from, like, insurance policies. So they may be deciding to sue, like, another way. So there is coverage out there. It's just, like, you have to search to find it, which is also shady.
Right. And, you know, just the whole idea of the Mass Department of Transportation putting out signals on these emergency lights. These electronic signs on the highway are to convey important information.
Yeah, and the ones around here have just been saying something about some sergeant lately on 91. Yeah, so that's even a different one than you're talking about on 90.
So everybody at home.
And I think it's bullshit.
We're not being hyperbolic when we say the United States is a fascist police state. And it always has been. Ask indigenous people. Ask black people. The thing is, if you argue it's getting worse now, it's getting worse. It's because you were on the in-group. I'm on the in-group. Joanna's on the in-group. We're being honest with our privilege here. That's why it's imperative we refuse to be governed by this. Become ungovernable on this issue, because honestly, it's already been here. Nazi Germany wishes it could be us.
And I think that your point about the coverage of this and how there are these parades for something that's a horrible accident, and it's upsetting probably for this man's family, but I do not need them to use tax dollars that for an already bloated police force to then shut down the streets and my town. On a weekday or whenever they want, sometimes during rush hour.
Real business hour. Right.
And this is, I've seen this in multiple towns, even recently in Western Mass, where things are shut down during a rush hour period, and it's interrupting commerce. It's interrupting, you know, people getting to take care of the people they need to, you know, could stop doctors, who knows. But it's fine, because it's because a police officer has perished, or whoever has died, and like of a state person who supposedly protects us and keeps us safe, we should honor them. But you know, when I see a group of protesters out in those same streets who are trying to stop mass killings, and they're trying to show, hey, maybe there's a different way. The discourse is completely different. And in fact, people want to harm them. So I think we should think about that a little bit, because those protesters typically, and I know all of our audience members are supporting and sometimes are some of those protesters, but please know we do see the differences in the way that people, I don't know, approach the protesters versus the state parades. And I'm personally more angry that they would spend tax dollars parading police through the streets. And I would much prefer protesters having the right to their freedom of speech. And when you're standing up for something like others' people's lives, I understand why you maybe stop traffic to get people's attention. I don't think that should be considered any more disruptive than what the police do. What the police do.
They're going to be mad about ambulances and fire trucks being blocked because there's a genocide.
Be mad about the police parades.
Be mad about the police parades. Because there's hundreds of thousands of people being murdered every day in the global south, and slowly murdered or directly murdered here in the United States, whether it's through the prison system, through debt, through the shitty healthcare system. It's all torture. It's all bad. And it's all inhumane. So bring the same energy and call to task your loved ones that bring the energy for this, but not that.
Yes.
The thing that why I get so angry about cops is how disgusting I find the logic. So this is straight out of, this is why I call them an occupying army as well, because this is a hearts and minds campaign. They are constantly in a hearts and minds campaign, which occupational forces do. This is like when you see the U.S. forces giving candy to Iraqi kids and playing soccer with them, taking a couple hours off killing their fathers, you know? And then one of their own, one of their brothers dies, and they use his dead body as PR to get OT at the very least. They're all clocked in and getting overtime and scamming that system. They're not there out of the goodness of their heart. They're getting paid, right? Meanwhile, every cop is in goddamn down, and I don't believe cops actually prevent crime, but like, if they prevent a crime, why are they telling everybody they're not going to be working for the next 3 hours? But regardless, to use your comrade, your dead brother, to get OT or sympathy for when the next controversy happens, you can wheel out your dead brother's picture. Or the next time a contract comes up you can't have regular flaggers because, you know, this is a dangerous gob looking. You know, it's like, yeah, his bulletproof vest and fucking tank didn't save him, you idiot. Maybe we got to rethink about how we do construction. I mean, maybe rethink transportation. What does this have to do with anything, you fucking fascist fuck? So we live in an occupied land. And again, if you're white, you don't feel it. And it maybe feel like it's encroaching on us, because it is. That's why it's important, Joanne, and I find it important to put our name on the record now. So if it does get worse, I'm not afraid to fucking stand 10 toes down on this. And I'm not going to say like, oh, I just joined this fad, or even run away from it and try to pretend like, oh, I that was my youth. No, this is wrong.
Well, and also I think it's good to remember that to deconstruct white supremacy within ourselves, it's okay for you to be uncomfortable. I have to work on this. I think everyone who is white has to. We're, like Spencer said, we're not used to being targeted or being made to feel uncomfortable. Sit with that and do what you need to do. Take action. But it's okay if we're uncomfortable sometimes. It helps. It's not a good thing, but it's our brothers and sisters who are not white have been uncomfortable for a really long time,
and
to say the least.
The sneaky, like, Uno reverse of white supremacy is have to be really careful with feeling sorry for yourself, because right to comfort
is a tenet of white supremacy.
Yes. And I know everybody's been traumatized, but I was specifically traumatized this time by this protest. So it's like, well, Black people have been traumatized systemically. So shut the fuck up, white person. Like,
right. And that's why I'm sharing this, because
careful
for
about
me,
feeling bad for yourself.
Yes. That's why I'm sharing this.
Yeah.
Yes. Because I think it's hard. I don't think you shouldn't feel bad for yourself, because that you can have things happen that make you, you know, feel upset about it. But when you fall into the pattern of thinking you have the right to comfort specifically, like you said, Spencer, it's like, it has been ingrained to most of us white people since we were little ones, especially if you were raised in a religious.
It is logical. Everybody's.
Yeah, it makes total sense. Like, you should be able to be comfortable, but not everyone is able to be comfortable.
It doesn't get the greater world.
Exactly. And like, there's
individualistic.
And there's so many people that are not comfortable already. So it's just something that we definitely think about here at the Weed Out when we're, you know, thinking.
The reason we talk about white supremacy and try to educate our fellow white people about it, because it's not black people and brown people's job.
No, that too.
The sad thing is the black community knows a lot more about us than we know about us. That is a reality. They clock us from a fucking mile away, and I don't blame, like, it makes total sense. They've had to learn us. We don't have, like, when you're on top, you don't have to look for your weaknesses. You don't have to, like, self-analyze. You don't have to break down every interaction that you had out of fear that maybe you'll get retaliated against by men in white hoods in the middle of the night that you won't be able to identify. So,
well, in present day, it means that you don't have to, you can't act angry because you're a woman. So, like, a lot of my black friends who are women tell me all the time, like, I'm not going to react that way, Joanna. And I appreciate you doing that for me if I get up angry for them, because it happens. If I see something and I'm in the same room with someone I love, I don't care what color it is, but especially a black person, like Spencer said, I'm going to say something. And I've had multiple black friends tell me, black women, that they are so thankful that they didn't have to become angry at all, because they're just consistently, that's a way to, like, detract from their messaging, just calling them an angry black woman. And I'm sorry, but they have every right to be angry. So if you never do that, never, ever, ever do that.
And also, this is the time where I throw a little asterisk in here where I say white supremacy doesn't necessarily require white skin. They'll take useful.
It doesn't.
They'll take useful pawns, people that are.
They really, will.
They will. Like, there's plenty of exceptions to this rule.
There are.
You know,
Candace Owens.
But like, I just want to ultimately say, like, dismantling, destructing, and criticizing and bullying white supremacy to its face is the role of us white people. I feel so.
I agree.
That,
and explaining it to others.
The fact that I learn more about white supremacy from people like James Baldwin or Martin Luther King than I have ever learned from a white guy. They taught me more about my people. You know, just those big examples, right? They taught me more about my people than I ever learned about thinking critical about my people from people that look like me.
Well, another great point is that reading texts of people that are not white is also a great way to learn and grow.
Yeah,
and I know our audience does, like, that.
Bullying it to its face is not their job, and it's our duty.
No.
It's our duty to them to, like, it's not totally about me. It's not about them. I'm not protect. They can protect themselves. They got themselves. I don't like white supremacy. I have a fucking problem with it. It makes me mad.
Preach, preach, preach.
This is, and if anything, it's a selfish motivation, because honestly, I was raised to be one of y'all. I find it fucking cowardly. I find it
evil.
It's the easy route.
It's fucking evil, though. Like, whoever, like, no. I
have,
and to me,
pride.
It doesn't. And to me, I'm sorry, it doesn't make sense. I fully, in my soul, my heart, everything about me, just to hate each other is wrong. And I know that
there's
most,
an inherent, and this isn't just,
that's not right. That's not right.
To think that there are people inherently above others,
that's gross.
Like, there has to be kings. There has to be.
No.
No, it absolutely fucking does not.
And we should all love each. And we should all love each other. And I don't mean that in the sense that, like, we're all holding hands singing fucking Kumbaya. But I mean, loving one another means we're all taken care of. We have what we need. And you just want that for someone else. I may never be able to speak to your face other than hello, goodbye, but I still would like you to be okay and have what you need. And that's love for each other and humanity. And that is what, when you look at children playing together, that is, the hate is taught. And so for me, one of the reasons I will always talk about this with other white people, and as a white person, it's a focus for me, and I will point it out anytime I see it, is I will not be a part of teaching this to any younger person or anyone else. I will only be a part of unlearning this and love. That is all that we should be focusing on as white people, is unlearning this craziness, this evil, horrible, disgusting indoctrination and making the world a better place. And I don't have children, but if I can help the world be better for everyone else's, that's great too.
Yeah. Well said. So yeah, that's these, when I see these, to bring it back to the, you know, topic at hand, like, this is white supremacy.
Well, it is. It's on display. Demanding
right to comfort for their fallen fucking.
Exactly.
Goon. They're white supremacist goon. And I'm sorry, anybody listening, they're white supremacists. They're imperialists. That you can't.
Yes. And they're
ethical cop. You can't. Like, you're really upholding can't. A structure. You're upholding a structure and you're a key element of it. You have a gun and a right to kill.
And you're going to shut down traffic when one of your colleagues dies, but you're going to arrest me if I shut down traffic because of a genocide in the Congo or in Gaza.
Or a colleague of yours being killed by the police.
Well, exactly. But like, they're only.
He's a colleague of all of us. He was a working class person.
Well, that's true. That's so true.
Michael Brown is a colleague of ours. Like, I'm sorry.
And like, personally, I wouldn't. And I just want to put this on the record. Like, I'm unique about this. Like, I don't want to have a parade for all of our deaths. Like, I don't think we should equally get, like, I just think no parade. But I know all people may have different thoughts on that. So I'm not the authority. When I'm dead, please do not parade me through the streets and stop traffic. I just... I think it's important for people to understand that you can't call, like, it's calling, like, call something what it is. If protesters are disturbing the peace with what they're doing with traffic, this parade nonsense when someone dies is disturbing the peace too, but we're funding it with our tax dollars. So it brings it back to the weed outs, like, mission too, is so that we all focus on our local politics, those budgets that matter. What are the people in Waltham paying for this? Are the state cops involved? How much does that cost? You know what I mean? So every town in that region might be spending fucking money on it. And that's something to think about.
We're also telling criminals they're not on the job.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Who's out keeping us safe?
Right.
When this parade happens, do they have a backup force that we don't know about?
Probably.
Oh no. Like, am I incredibly unsafe? Well,
they have all their rookies out. They have all their rookies out that were too young to know this guy.
Well, yeah, and the audience, LOL, because the audience knows I don't believe that we're mostly unsafe here in America.
We're doing a thought exercise. This isn't actually how we think. Like,
we're doing a bit. We're doing.
I don't think police should exist. So in my world, we don't even have to have this debate.
Yeah, yeah, but nope. The parades. It's just, and so that's just one of the things I know. Throughout the year, we've shared so many different. I don't know, I guess accounts of people having interactions with the police that show that they don't protect us. They show that they're draining our communities of precious tax dollars that could go towards helping those that need it the most. And honestly, the amount of money would trickle back up to probably the most wealthy in a community. I am no freaking person you should be having run your books, but I do know a few things about counting numbers. And the monies that we give to police forces in our towns could just, oh man, I just want us all to focus in the future on what can we do with those funds and how can we think of ways as we move forward. I know that there are some things that... the slogan defund the police makes people uncomfortable, but we're not doing that. We're reallocating funds to make things better. So I know my slogan of reallocating funds to make things better isn't as poignant or upsetting, but I want us to think about what we can do as the new year approaches, because there will be a lot of local stuff we'll focus on in different towns. There's new mayors coming into office. Budget season will eventually hit. And we just want to think about that. And this is another example out in Waltham of dollars just being pretty much flushed down the toilet, in my opinion.
Yeah. And this is the stuff they show us. So imagine.
That's the thing.
You know.
It's upsetting.
Yeah. I mean, that. I guess that's what kind of ticks me off about, you know, people who say they're fiscally conservative. But
me too.
That money's gone.
What are you talking about?
It doesn't trickle anywhere. It's just gone. Whereas you invest in other things, the money comes back to you.
Right. I don't think any politician in the entire country that I've like that I've personally witnessed, it could call themselves a fiscal conservative based on either being okay with the military or police budgets. They're absurd.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't think it's like something only libertarians may say.
Holidays are coming up for everybody. The Pentagon's failed its 6th audit in a row. They've lost trillions with a T, trillions. I didn't even know trillions existed, but they do. Dollars, they don't know where they are. They're probably funding genocides we don't even know about with them. Or, you know, they're in the hands of bad people who paid top dollar for it. So, yeah, I mean, imagine what our police budgets, if you actually audited and looked at it, it's like there's no, when you invest in guns, you don't get anything back. You just don't. You invest in water, you have a healthier community. You have people that aren't thirsty. You know, like you get something out of that. Whereas just dumping money into guns and tanks and shields, it's so much money that literally you may as well burn it. It like, I thought y'all capitalists, like, shouldn't every dollar create more dollars? But all of a sudden, well, it costs what it costs when it comes to fucking guns that kill marginalized people and poor people. But anything you have to justify.
Yes, yes, that's what I was going to say.
But it's like, well, you like, okay, so like, say somebody's like, just in my utopian world, we're going to take all that money we spent on police, we're not going to spend any money, it's gone. Free for all, whatever. We're going to take all that money and we're going to house the homeless and house everybody, not just the homeless. We're going to make sure everybody's taken care of with that money, which that's enough money to do so, by the way. The amount of money we spend on domestic policing, we could just.
Oh, have. Yeah, absolutely.
All of us, rich, poor, in between, would never have to worry about a roof over our head. Never. That's how much money we're spending on this. That never trickles back into the economy, the precious economy. It just burned. I guess, you know, the cops go buy boats and shit, but whatever. They're not actually contributing to human society. So follow me on this, right? Where was I? I lost myself. But we spent all this money. But if you bring up spending all this money on, say, solving the homelessness or hunger issue, which is like literally more, there's more than enough money here. There'll be money left. Yes.
It's impossible to solve.
They say, oh, but it might fail.
Mm-hmm.
Like you'll throw endless money at something that's always failing.
Well, they also create like it fail. Like the shelter systems are horrible by all accounts of every person that doesn't lacks a home you have like talked to. Usually it's like they develop systems that are just like filtering people into, it's all filtering into the prison industrial complex. So that's why it's not just the cops that we have to, and you've already said it, we're anti-capitalist, like it's the wealthy and those in power who make like laws that allow for like, say, BlackRock to own 100,000 homes across the Northeast too, things like that. So it's a system that's like there's systems upon systems.
Yeah, neoliberals and neoconservatives have effectively killed any of our social services that we all think they don't work properly.
Right, but they would. They're not allowed to.
They would systematically for the last 50 years. And this is what everybody was saying when I was a kid is going to happen. And it's happening. Like the woke people I knew growing up that were like the cranks at my family parties were like, yo, this is going to be fucked in like the 2030s. Because then people are going to go straight to everything private because the public sector wasn't working. And then, like, I don't know. Anyways.
But it's, like, set that way. So I want everyone to just consider that's why in the new year, like we always do, we can focus on pressing our local here in Western Mass, and our friends out east can do the same. You know, pressing the budget as much as you can to focus on the things that do help the community, like education, you know, public health, housing, etc. And someday, hopefully, we'll even have universal health care here in the United States. Don't let them tell you it can't be done. It can. It's done in most countries throughout the world. Some funded by us.
And so. I want to make sure that everybody knows how we feel in our heart of hearts, this worker that died, this National Grid worker.
Keto Roderick Jackson.
Keto Roderick Jackson, my age, 36 years old. You know, the reason we didn't do an episode on that person is because we want his family to fucking grieve. So maybe we'll reach out to his family for a comment in a few weeks, you know, when they have a little time. We want to give them space to breathe. This isn't about reactionary. But we felt like this was really like, dude, every digital sign in Massachusetts was honoring this fucking goober, like, who chose to be a class traitor. And I'm sorry, that's why I don't have much sympathy when cops die doing cop shit, because honestly, if a lot of things were different, that life would still be here. But he chose to oppress and occupy his own community and his own fucking class comrades because he has no class consciousness. And, you know, no sympathy. I feel bad for your family, I guess, but, you know, I don't know. I feel heartbroken for the National Grid Keto worker Keto, because that's me. You know, like,
it could be any of us. It's really sad.
The road for my job, like, that's me.
Right.
Or it could be me hitting somebody. It could also be me, because our system's so stupid and we have pods driving around everywhere and chaotic human beings being chaotic human beings with capitalist pressures on their minds, getting from point A to point B, having to communicate with so-and-so here, and it needs to be done now. I also need to pick up the fucking dry cleaning, you know, just like the rush, rush, rush that everybody's in. It's like, no wonder crazy shit happens on the roads and these vehicles that drive speeds, and they're missiles, man.
They are.
Let's realize the power.
A reminder for everyone to drive safely.
Yeah. And, you know, my job, thankfully, I think it's taught me a lot of patience with driving and recognizing what you're doing, like, and what the reality is. And like, it's road rage kind of really broke it for me. Like, seeing people get road rage, where I was like, I used to get mad at them. Like, why are you doing this? You're actually being more dangerous. But the reality is, driving is a fight or flight thing. Like, you don't recognize it because you've conceptually wrapped your head around it. We've multi-generations lived with this technology, so we're in theory used to it. But our brain is like,
mine's not.
This organic mass that I am specifically tasked with keeping safe is in an unsafe situation, and we do this for hours a day. So when somebody cuts you off, that's literally putting, you know, your life at risk. So of course your brain's going to go into fight or flight, and some people fight, and that's road rage. And then I was like, oh well, oh yes, because cars are, our brain in its core, you know, this is a fucking dangerous idea.
Right, it is, and I feel guilty of minute road rage. I feel like from the perspective of the other person, I probably look kind of adorable but angry. And it's usually like, I'm not like trying to harm anyone. I have honked for a really long time, or I do flip people off. This is my PSA though, like, please don't engage in road rage if you can, because I understand why you're upset and why you're nervous, but you just never know what the other person may do in retaliation. And then you're more at risk of being unsafe.
It's made me be a more accountable. So, like, you know, when something happens and, you know, you kind of like, you do something that it happens.
Yes, I freak. I get really thrown off if someone cuts me off. I do.
You're on late. Like, you got to the turn, like a human error, right?
Right.
The person behind you, like, is clearly agitated. I'm a big fan of the mea culpa. Like, if they happen to pull up to you in the red light, look at them and give them the fucking, my bad, you know, hands across the chest, like, I'm sorry, my bad, hands up, like, and like try to like recognize, like, yeah, that must have been annoying. Like, I feel like that's really something I've developed since I'm on the road so much now, and even in my personal vehicle, it's like, it's kind of all the same shit, where it's like, I just assume people are having a rough day, and also like, this is
for sure
an incredibly triggering experience.
For sure.
So, and incredibly dangerous. OSHA, is this okay? Probably not. Again, if we didn't spend all this money on this bullshit, and we wouldn't need cops sitting on the side of the road, and this goober would still be with us. But no.
Well, and I have to say, I have, you know, and I feel like I've said it on the show, The cops did not prevent me from being hit by a huge SUV head on. They have never prevented any accident I've ever been in. And how could they?
Because it's a fool's errand.
Yeah, and just it's just accidents happen, and it's a huge freaking rocket that you're driving, like through space, going way too fast usually. So just all just you know, yeah.
Collectively, as human beings, get together and solve the salute. Let's the root cause. Humans should not be driving cars. I'm sorry.
It's like it scares me still. We all know.
Crazy.
I do okay, but that's why I understand how people can get upset because I myself can.
Like riding horses is crazy too. You're riding a sentient.
It is right. It is crazy. Have you ridden horses?
Not like I've been on a horse, but
yeah, it is crazy though. It's crazy.
I've never been a big rider, but like some people, like well, when back in those days, you know, the roads didn't have to be as wide because blah blah blah. Horses can only do so much, and they only go so fast and all the shit, right? And it's just
they
like
still could throw you, like kick you in the head if you're behind them.
Whereas a motor is a motor, you know? But at the same time, like driving in a fucking steel cage at that speed is crazy. It's a crazy concept. And we've normalized.
But both make me scary, like scared. Humans are just so, like, I think our innovation sometimes will overlook the most wild things just because I think back to the times riding when I was a kid. We rode, like, not a ton, but, like, we'd go Western style riding through, like, the mountains and the Catskills. And I was always afraid, and the horses would know, and like they would take off or do crazy shit. Like you can, stuff can happen. So, cars, horses, flying, that's all kind of scary. I get why people get kind of like squirmy with any of those scenarios.
And if somebody tries to argue with you, one argument back or tactic to disarm the argument I've had when they say, oh, cops, if they didn't write tickets, the threat of the ticket. And I'm like, the tickets don't deter, people still speed. Like,
but yeah, it's a thing.
And they're like, well, the tickets just, well, imagine all the ones that wouldn't if there was no penalty. And it's like, yeah, there's supposed to be a consequence, but I don't see how chasing them down.
The only thing that seems to deter when I'm driving is like, well, you know how everyone slows down when they see a cop car?
Right.
Like the fear of getting a ticket, but I don't want to instill fear in everyone constantly.
That doesn't make people better drivers is all I'm saying.
No, it definitely doesn't. It definitely doesn't.
It's just like when you grow up in a repressive household. It teaches you how to lie, teaches you how to hide.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They just slow down when the cops
present. Doesn't solve the root issue. I'm not saying speeding is good. So that's the.
I know that.
I'm saying that's the thought process. Somebody that's even you know, like somebody that doesn't like police brutality and doesn't, they just like, well, how else do you do it? And I understand. I don't have a great solution. I think you gotta, maybe we have to divest from cars and find another way.
Well, yeah. Like ultimately, we would have already, like, we wouldn't have given a. So, like, I love the bike trails all over the state. I think they're fantastic. But my partner and I were talking once, and he brought up, like, those were railroads at one time that connected us, like, at a local level to towns and, like, places surrounding us. And it's just, like, so the bike paths, I don't, so for me, it's kind of, like, instead of keeping those Gilded Age, like, railroads up in place so that the wealthy could travel from, you know, Northampton to Hartford for the day, it was much more localized. Like, we could have gone regionally all over. Think of where our bike trails are. So, like, that part makes me, like, I'm like, why did we decide to do bike trails and not keep regional rail? Because as someone who's been able to use public transportation in major cities, it is awesome.
Rubber lobby.
But I'm just saying, you know what I mean? It sucks. Probably. I know the cars.
But literally, because bikes use rubber. So.
Well, and I guess, you know, it's probably expensive to keep. I'm sure it is expensive to keep regional railroads going. And our money goes a lot to other things.
Well, so, like we were saying in previous episodes, like when you own your internet infrastructure, it ultimately is cheaper. And you're more
long term. Yeah.
You own it. Like if a town owns their power source, hopefully if they're being managed correctly, they're investing because it's not a lease. It's not like, oh, we can just fire this and get another company to come in to provide that service. Like if you're doing it yourself, you can invest in the infrastructure and, you know, set yourself up for the long run. So, you know, as communities, we need to invest in that. But this is the problem with profit motive, man. Like the railroads wanted to make money and they couldn't. How dare it be effective and break even or even lose money?
Right. They are trying to extend right now Amtrak service east to west or along Route 2. And so honestly, I do really hope that happens because you could technically maybe go from like Boston to North Adams by rail. And like where I live, I could drive to Wachusett and like take the rail into Boston. So I think any extensions of the railroads that exist in our communities, we should push for. That is a way for us to, and buses in our towns and cities are often really underfunded. And sometimes people can't, like I've talked to many people in the community of like Hadley, Amherst, and Northampton when I lived there. And they couldn't, we would use the bus system there more frequently because it did run more during school hours. So it was like focused on the UMass and like five college like schedule. But for working people, sometimes it's a, during those non-school times, it doesn't serve them well in terms of getting them to and from work. So they would spend like a for what for them, like a lot of money getting one way or the other just to get to work. So I think investing in all of those things, yeah, even if it's just a little bit at a time, is a good thing. Reallocating those funds.
Just so if anybody at home is wondering why we always are divergent people. So if trains are,
Transplanes and automobiles.
I wouldn't say it's a hyper fixation for us, but we both think about trains a lot, and that's
We do.
we've brought up trains a bunch of times.
All right, fine, but like they're important.
It's just proof that we're divergent. We love trains.
Whatever. I
They're
don't need
great.
any. We are. Yeah.
And I believe in, decentralized hyperlocal economies. So personally, I feel like that's the only way to do it equitably. Trying to fucking scale shit out always fails. In
But
my
then it's hard to build a connected railway. So that's why that's hard. This is a open to conversations about how we do things in the future.
there's a whole ecosystem thing we have to be concerned about, and marginalized communities making sure they're served and or not destroyed. Like when they built the highway system, it's an incredibly racist
Oh,
system.
God.
Like it's our racism is literally in our infrastructure. Like it's crazy.
It's true.
So anyways, not to end on a down note, everybody, but this whole episode was basically a ghoulery and tomfoolery. So
It was.
take that as your holiday gift. Remember, the fascists never take a day off. They even used their dead buddy's fucking body to grift and to garner sympathy and whitewash their crimes against humanity. And I mean that with my whole chest. I believe I have utter disdain for class traitors, and especially the ones that claim ignorance. Because if you're an open-minded person, you would listen to people saying, "Hey, man, you shouldn't become a cop." Like, every cop has been had somebody had a conversation with that guy before he became a cop. Because the effects of bad policing and bad judicial system has touched everybody in this country. And you're always going to know at least one person that was directly harmed. I guarantee you, every cop, there's before they become a cop, there's one person, even if 99% of the people around them are like all about them being a cop, there's gonna be one person like, "Don't do it." So listen to that person, I guess. Anybody that's considering being a future cop, don't do it. That's my advice for everybody. If it feels like being a cop, don't do it.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair, even if it feels like it.
Anyways, my hyper focus is police. I don't like guys with guns acting like they're tough guys when they're, doing occupying forces with unarmed civilians. We are the unarmed civilians. They're occupying us. They're especially occupying the indigenous and black populations and the, non-in group. I don't know, like, trans women. Like, being a white woman gets you a lot, but you can still be a target for the police, unfortunately. They, yeah, not good. Not good stuff. See the Sandra Birchmore episode if you're curious. An example of cops being awful to well, white women. Like, they do really fucked up shit to every purse community with less power than white men. So that's my mission here, and that's the end of 2024 for us. That this
But
whole
2023.
getting ahead of myself, sorry.
Yeah, don't age me.
here's hoping that 2024 isn't worse than 2023. Let's say that. Like, I don't think it can get much worse, but everybody, thank you for tuning in. And sorry, it's like we've been giggling this episode, so I don't know. I feel a little weird ending it on the.
Well, I have something to say. I think I would like everyone to remember the war on Christmas. If you're speaking to someone who thinks that's happening, remember it is. Let them know that and tell them to please, you know, contact me directly and I'll fight with them about how much there is a war on Christmas. And just try to keep yourself laughing and get through the season as well as you can. I know it's a hard one, but like Spence said, I think there is so much good that can come in 2024 because it has been such a hard year. And that gives us something to look forward to. Absolutely. Don't you think?
And yeah. To jump on the war on Christmas thought, I will gladly, I'm in neither camp. I don't give a fuck.
I just think it's funny to upset like religious people.
So I'm reaching out to the people that think there's a war on Christmas versus the people that actually on Christmas, like Joanna, apparently.
It's a single war, probably, just to anger the Christian right.
I think there are a lot of people that are actively trying to have a war on Christmas back because, you know, when you wish something, it does come true.
Yeah, evangelicals, stop whining so hard because now I'm appeared.
Actionary Christians, if you keep saying something's happening, it's eventually going to happen. Like
I only write it as Xmas. I've never used Christ as Christmas since like 2018 because it will incite people.
Oh, really?
And it's so funny. Oh my gosh. It's the funniest thing, everyone. So Xmas.
So I happen to like eating and spending time with my family. So I would like this war on Christmas to end and we come to a peace accord. But just
to eat and spend time.
No, I know you do. I know. I think I haven't declared a side on the war on Christmas. I'm kind of like
fair
Christians, I guess, is really the side I'm on. Like, I find your side humorous and cheeky. Like, that's fun.
Thank you. That's what it's supposed to be. Not at all.
It's supposed to be.
It's not supposed to be upsetting. It's just funny.
It's supposed to be fun. So that's maybe my bias there. But if y'all just keep in mind, I am going to have to ask Christians to stop spending so much money on stupid shit. Christmas, I'm all, but I love the idea of gift giving. I hate that it's all like Christmas has been totally saturated with consumerism as opposed
yes.
to the idea of like, hey, I like nothing better than when somebody like, I don't know, bought me a pair of boots one year, like a loved one, and I still wear them because they were a really good gift. Like they spent more money than I would have spent. They treated me to something and it meant something. And yes, they bought a commercial item, but like, yeah, just like all these knickknacks and stupid bullshit. I like, you know, I know the decorations and stuff are supposed to be fun, but I get itchy about it. So it's like, it's so wasteful. Like, what? All that like copper inside those wires. Like, what are we doing? Just, you know, I don't know. And then knowing how many people just throw that shit out while it still works. Like, just that shit gets
it's a lot.
The war on Christmas, maybe for different reasons, but I will gladly negotiate peace accords. I want there to be a joyous holiday where we can all shut the fuck up and eat, but also like I'm not going to tolerate genocide. So
I don't break bread with people that will.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess that's another sticking point, but at the very least we can end open hostilities. Y'all can just keep your Christ to yourself.
That's how I feel.
Good Xmas, Christmas,
and it's Hanukkah season, and there are so many other holidays that come this time of year. And I just want everyone. Some people don't celebrate at all, and that's fine too. I just think it's I call it the cold season, and it's hard to get through because it's dark and cold, and it's shitty. So I just hope everyone stays well. Thank you for being our audience, for being people that send us information on stuff we should cover, for being our anchors, for just being out there. We love you and we're so happy to bring you more content in 2024.
As always, you can find everything we mentioned on this episode that would have a link or whatever at www.theweedout.com in the show notes. Each episode has its own show notes with its own information. Feel free to reach out to us on all the socials. You can access that all from our website, or you can go to one of our social media accounts and click on the link tree in bio. hope everybody's having a good winter and, you know, keep weeding out the bullshit.
Take care.